Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. One of the UK's finest film writers joins us today, Ian Nathan. Ian has been on Beta twice before to talk about Ridley Scott and Guillermo del Toro. Today, Ian joins us to discuss his latest book, Christopher Nolan, the iconic filmmaker and his work. In the introduction, Ian says, quote, "Nolan has defied the laws of Hollywood by creating startling, original genre pieces that have reveled in their own complexity," unquote. I think Ian is bang on. Nolan's filmography is very impressive. It includes his flag-planting breakthrough, Memento, the brooding Dark Knight trilogy, and time-bending blockbusters like Inception and Interstellar. In his book, Ian explores the origin stories of Nolan's movies and decodes what makes them so successful. He joined us from London to talk about Nolan's works and what makes a film Nolan-esque.
I think you see a very distinct style in Christopher Nolan's work, that if you went in not knowing what the film or who'd made the film was, you'd pick up very quickly. One thing is he has a certain sort of austere, almost film noir style. In terms of, he likes urban environments, he likes men in suits, he likes not just bat suits, he likes some grey suits. He likes a kind of a sophisticated backdrop and a kind of a very realistic one. Even films like Dunkirk and The Prestige, which don't necessarily fit into the urban environments, are realistic in their own worlds. But more than that, I think the distinct thing that makes a Nolan-esque film is playing around with time. And he's fascinated with the structure of films in terms of their linearity and breaking the rules of that. Obviously, you think of something like Dunkirk, where it plays three different plot lines and intersects them, but they're all actually moving at different times. So it's quite a confounding idea. You look at something like Inception and you're moving between layers of plot, each with their own time. You think of Memento, which is a film that literally moves backwards in time. The chronology of the film goes backwards. And you think of Tenet, which I think blew people's minds quite a lot. But that actually is all about the future intersecting with the past and scenes going forward and scenes literally played backwards. So fundamentally, I would say Nolan-esque applies to this incredible journey with the concept of time.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. Nolan's breakthrough film is Memento. Can you tell us about the origin story of Memento?
Yes, this begins with Jonathan Nolan, known as Jonah. He was a psychology major, Jonah, and he had this, it's all about this idea of short-term memory loss, the actual, you know, medical version of short-term memory loss, that these kind of these people that can remember longer term memories, but can't remember, you know, literally forget things after 10 minutes. And the idea of a murder plot told through that character who can't hold on to information, almost defeating the idea of a plot, fascinated Christopher Nolan. He was absolutely kind of, you know, how do you make that work? Because that sort of cuts right to the heart of filming and plotting and storytelling. If your lead character can't remember anything, how can he trust anyone? He has to rely on what they tell him.
I've told you this before, haven't I?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to mess with you, but it's so weird. You don't remember me at all.
No.
We've talked a bunch of times.
I'm sure we have, yeah.
Well, what's the last thing you remember?
My wife.
What's it like?
It's like waking. It's like you just woke up.
That must suck. It's all backwards, I mean.
And he hit upon the inspired notion of, if I tell the story backwards, so the beginning of the next scene actually is the scene before the scene you've just watched, then the audience has the same effect. The audience lose their memory. They can't tell what's going on because the scene they've just seen doesn't relate chronologically to the scene you're now watching. A brilliant idea, a controversial idea, because it sort of breaks the rules of narrative. It's like an outside puppet master manipulating the way the story is told. You know, there's not time travel. It's a structural thing, but extraordinary. And it absolutely sort of sent the kind of the indie scene wild. And, you know, Memento became a huge hit on that scene. And it was the film that really pushed Christopher Nolan into the mainstream.
Mm-hmm. And with the DVD, one of the extras is watching the story backwards, which would be forward.
Yes, absolutely. Right? Yes.
Yeah. Nolan has made three films about Batman, collectively known as the Dark Knight Trilogy. What is it about Batman that intrigues him so much?
I don't think he set out to be a comic book director in any way. I mean, he knew the characters and he knew the world that Batman sort of presented. But it came along as an offer. And I think what he liked about particularly the Batman world is, first of all, he's not a superhero in the sense of he has superpowers. He has a kind of fantasy element. So what that presented to someone like Nolan, who loves realism, is that you can put him in a real context. And that's, you know, opened up the world to him. So he could turn a comic book character, Batman, and all the villains that are associated with him, the Joker, Ra's al Ghul, Bane, you know, all these characters, you know, Catwoman, but he could turn them into a sort of film noir style characters, and he could make it very dark. He could sort of interpret real world things with it and make films political and do all sorts of dramatic elements with it. But I think for Nolan, it was sort of a, like with most things, he wanted to sort of invert the logic of, you know, the standard approach to comic book films. He wanted to make them less fantasy, less huge, although his films are huge, but more realistic. He said, right, what happens if you put the Joker, the concept of the Joker, into a real world environment? What would he be? How would he function? And I thought that's really daring when you think about it.
Because it's all part of the plan. But when I say that one little old mare will die, well, then everyone loses their minds. Introduce a little anarchy. Upset the established order, and everything becomes chaos. I'm an agent of chaos. Oh, and you know the thing about chaos? It's fear.
What was it about Heath Ledger that made Nolan decide to cast him as the Joker?
I think it was, in the end, it was, he had an idea. He's actually read for Batman Begins, come in, and it hadn't gotten on very well with Nolan at that point, and had been rather dismissive of superhero films. But obviously something lingered in Nolan's mind about Heath Ledger. And I think he went back to Heath Ledger, and they talked about this concept of the character as being chaotic and unpredictable, and having a kind of very distinctive state of mind and delivery within the film. And I think from then it was just how well Heath Ledger took that on board and went with the character. But he gives it a kind of sniggering kind of humour, and it's incredibly charismatic.
But I know the truth. There's no going back. You've changed things forever. Then why do you want to kill me? To kill you? What would I do without you? Go back to ripping off mob dealers? No, you complete me.
You're garbage. You kills for money.
Don't talk like one of them. You're not. Even if you'd like to be.
And we, none of us have seen it coming. Heath Ledger was a very good actor, but quite a minimalist actor before that, quite restrained. And suddenly to see him completely throw, you know, all that to the wind and act with such abandon is quite thrilling.
Yeah, definitely. It really is. Yeah. Ironically, after the raging success of The Dark Knight, Nolan almost blocked his own way to his next film, Inception. You describe Inception as an allegory about filmmaking. How so?
Yeah, I think this is true of all his films in the sense that the one thing that for filmmakers that is more apparent in their lives than anything else is filmmaking itself. It's what they do for vast amounts of their life. It's what they think about probably for nearly all of their lives. You know, that the concept of structuring a film and making a film and how you put scenes together and the organization of films. And I think that often gets translated, whether it's subconsciously or not, into the stories they tell. But I think with Nolan, it's much more explicit than maybe with other filmmakers, because he plays around in his plots with the concept of time and the control of time.
The compound we'll be using to share the dream creates a very clear connection between dreamers whilst actually accelerating brain function.
In other words, it gives us more time on each level.
Brain function in the dream will be about 20 times normal. When you enter a dream within that dream, the effect is compounded. It's three dreams, that's 10 hours,
I'm
times 20.
Maths was never my strong subject. How much time is that?
It's a week, the first level down. 6 months, the second level down, and the third level.
It's 10 years.
And it's also about the creation of storylines. Within the concept of Inception, the team that goes in, Leonardo DiCaprio's crack team, are essentially a crew who build a narrative, you know, within the mind of their chosen target. And one of them is the architect, and they're almost like the production designer, the director. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's kind of the producer who organises things. And Nolan has said this, that there's a kind of a shape to the team within the film that parallels the filmmaking crew that make a film. And I think he likes that idea of sort of echoing the process of storytelling as a filmmaker within his films.
Nolan was always inspired by Stanley Kubrick, and that shows most in Nolan's eighth film, the sci-fi epic Interstellar. You say that Interstellar completed Nolan's unofficial trilogy with Insomnia and Inception. I guess we could call it the letter I trilogy. What did you mean by that?
I think they're all films that are, to an extent, science fiction. You know, when we talk about Nolan's use of genre, it's kind of quite distinct in that he's never overt, and that's a kind of Kubrick-like quality. He loves realism. Obviously, his films are extraordinary and do extraordinary things, but the context of them is scientific rather than fictional, if you know what I mean. And with Interstellar, he wanted to do a film about galactic travel that pondered the possibilities, the realities, if you want, of that, which is a very Kubrickian response to storytelling. He is delving into real science. And he spent time with astrophysicists, and he sort of tested this guy called Kip Thorne, who was kind of a big influence on the film. And he would show him the screenplay, and they would discuss the idea of traveling through wormholes and is that a bending space and all these kind of incredibly huge concepts, because Nolan wanted to get it right and he wanted to portray it accurately.
The planet is much closer to Gargantua than we thought.
Gargantua.
It's what we're calling them, the black hole. Miller's and Dr. Mann's planets both orbit it.
And Miller's is on the horizon?
Oh, it's a basketball around a hoop. Landing there takes us dangerously close, and a black hole that big has a huge gravitational pull.
Look, I could swing around that neutron star to decelerate.
No, it's not that. It's time. The gravity on that planet will slow our clock compared to Earth's drastically.
Oh, how bad?
Well, every hour we spend on that planet will be 7 years back on Earth. Well, that's relativity, folks.
And again, you come back to that whole idea about time that is the kind of the central Nolan fascination. So you have that fantastic concept within physics of time running at different paces in different locations. So I think, you know, the Kubrickian thing is very much in the kind of realism and the clinical approach he takes to these high concepts.
Mm. As you mentioned, all of Nolan's films explore our relationship to time, perhaps none more than his war film, Dunkirk. What did Dunkirk mean to Nolan?
Well, his grandfather had been in the war, and I think he wanted to make a film that I think was different and had a different context. You know, he hadn't made a period piece for a while, not since The Prestige. And, you know, he'd done a lot of sort of what you call very upfront kind of blockbusters, the Batman trilogy and Inception and Interstellar. And he was fascinated by the idea of, you know, the more he read about Dunkirk, the more the immediacy of what had gone on, these soldiers trapped on a beach and this extraordinary rescue mission that was launched to bring them back across the channel, the more he thought this is a fascinating story about survival and survival instincts. So I think the more he sort of conceptualized the idea of a Dunkirk film, the less it became a war film, and the more it became a film about something much more primal, which was our instinct to survive. What are we willing to do under these circumstances survive?
Well done.
All we did is survive.
That's enough.
Then, of course, this extraordinary filmmaker arose in him, and he conceptualized this idea of three different storylines and three different mediums. So one is a guy in a Spitfire, one is a team on a boat going over to rescue them, and one is the soldier on the beach. So three different sort of sea, air and land, if you want, these sort of three different elements that he mixed up. And then, of course, he does this extraordinary idea of each one almost being in their own time signature, as it were, like a piece of music. There are different intersecting time signatures. Music plays an enormous influence in how Nolan puts his films together. It's very much about almost a disaster film structure, that how do you stay alive? And the kind of sheer dynamic of that drives that film.
Mm-hmm, very much so. Ian Nathan, thank you very much for joining us today. It's always such a pleasure to talk to you. Congratulations on Christopher Nolan, the iconic filmmaker and his work. It's suitably Nolan-esque and, I dare say, suitably Nathan-esque.
Thank you. A pleasure.
Ian Nathan is the author of Christopher Nolan, the iconic filmmaker and his work. Find out more at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Rich Hall, Julie Seebaugh, and Ian Nathan. Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta or on Twitter at WPRBeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Oh, he's the best. He has no imagination.
Special thanks to producer Tyler Ditter.
You wanted me. Here I am.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
Tell your men they work for me now. This is my city.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
It's a job for some very, very powerful people.